If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
Rewind to Dynamite from the post-wrestling site, AEW, lighting up the fuse, sit back and enjoy the bubbly. We hear from John and Waitay. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
Here we are, everybody. Moments removed from Dynamite. Wait, we have breaking news. We have an updated lineup for Title Tuesday next week.
Oh, okay. All right. After we spent like a good portion of the XL edition just talking about
one of them's my mistake. I did omit the street fight that they did set up with the Hurt Syndicate against Ricochet and GOA. So they had announced that. So there were two matches. They have also announced Brodito against Okada and Takeshita for the AEW tag titles next week.
Yeah, actually, that was announced on the show too.
Was that announced?
Or they at least made the challenge on the show.
Okay.
Yeah.
I completely missed that.
There was a Callis family segment.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry, folks. I'm so sorry.
Okay, so what else? What else is on the show?
That's it. With the Mercedes match. So we got three matches.
Okay, so three matches. I mean, okay.
Well, for 2 hours, fine. I mean, we're probably not getting... Well, we'll get more than that. But anyway, okay. There you go. That's the setup. Where are we going? Thursday, Way.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody speak. Are you ready to talk about the free press?
I am. I'm looking forward to this one. It's a very topical one. This is a documentary that I don't know if it's really gotten that much discussion among wrestling circles when it was first released in 2017. But I feel like it's even more relevant today than it was back then. It's a Netflix documentary largely focused on the idea of how billionaires can basically attempt to silence journalism through their power. And to illustrate this, they use the Hogan versus Gawker trial. And John, you and I actually went to one of the premieres of this,
yeah,
in the world. And I feel like back then we were one of the first few people to probably, like, you know, actually watch this. And mm-hmm. We both went in maybe more so just interested in the whole journalistic aspect. I don't know if I realized, I did you, that it was so centered around Hulk Hogan and Gawker?
Yeah, I seem to remember like there were like that was covered. I don't think I realized it was going to be so prevalent. Like basically the documentary is broken up into two chapters. It's like the Gawker trial and then this purchase of the Las Vegas Review Journal and sort of taking an overall look at the consolidation of media and just a lot of, you know, just the First Amendment being under fire here. And this is, again, we're speaking about 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'll be talking about this whole documentary. The first time we've actually been able to speak about it at length tomorrow on Rewind Away in the Post Wrestling Cafe. And joining us will be the person who chose this review, Neil Flanagan. He'll be joining us for the entire documentary. And of course, I'm very curious about his thoughts on it as well from a journalistic perspective.
Yes. Nobody better than two Canadians and an Irishman to talk about the First Amendment in the United States.
We can have an opinion.
We're casual observers. We're sure. Not in the thick of it. We can look from our from far away. But I'm looking forward to this discussion. So that's coming out Thursday on Rewind Away, and then Friday, Way and I are back with Rewind to SmackDown, and into the weekend we will have Collision Course Saturday night with Kate from Montreal, and
me.
And Wei is on collision duty to see Eddie Kingston against Dralístico.
Yeah. 2.5 was not enough hours of AEW Dynamite content. No. I'm used to 5+ at this point. So bring it
Wei is going to be refreshing Tony Khan's Twitter all day Saturday to find out what he's going to be watching Saturday night as that show comes together. Also this weekend, the long and winding Royal Road makes its long-awaited return as a Rich Fan will join WH Park. They are chatting about a Kenta Kobashi Toshiaki Kawada match from 1995 where they may or may not go the hour. Spoiler, 30 years later.
There you go. This is episode 49 of the Long and Winding Royal Road. So episode 50 is coming up. So
Gets it for that.
He might even
why is that a big deal? It's just an episode. It's just what?
It's no six. You know, six is really the magic number. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to hearing Rich and WH chat about that. And then on Sunday as well, we will have a UFC 320 review from Jack Wannan and Eric Marcotte as they will be talking about Alex Pereira's attempt to regain the light heavyweight championship from Magomed Ankalaev this Saturday night in Las Vegas. So all of that can be found this weekend, postwrestlingcafe.com.
One more announcement for us to make here, and that is that, everybody knows that The Smashing Machine is releasing in many theaters. Is it a wide release, John?
Oh, yeah, dude. Yeah.
Oh, it's a very wide release then. Okay. Mm-hmm. So before you go out to watch The Smashing Machine, maybe you want to hear our thoughts on the original documentary, The Smashing Machine, a very famous one for MMA fans. And we reviewed this recently on an edition of Rewind Away. John and I will be releasing that particular podcast for free on the free feed on Friday. So maybe you want to watch the documentary before or maybe after you watch the movie, then maybe you want to get our thoughts too. But as for the movie review itself, we will be heading out to watch Dwayne Johnson's Smashing Machine at some point over this weekend or next week, and we will be releasing our review of that movie exclusively in the Post Wrestling Cafe next Thursday.
That is right. So head on over to postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 a month gets you 30 days of access and all of the bonus shows. Our Smashing Machine review will be out next week. Nobody Speak this week, and then we're doing reviews of Bound for Glory, King of Pro Wrestling, and so much more throughout the month of October. So look out for all of that. Let us now head on over to the 6th anniversary of Dynamite, this 2.5-hour special from the Seminole Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida, WrestleTix's latest number, 3,650. And if you got there before Dynamite, you got to see arguably the best female wrestler in the world as Saray wrestled on ROH, teaming with Alex Windsor against Billy Starks and Diamante.
That's cool. Wow. I had no idea until just now.
Well, I mean, this was my pick for female wrestler of the year last year. So, I guess she is not technically from Florida. So I guess she would not qualify as a Mercedes opponent for next week, but that would be a hell of a match.
She could show up in the aftermath, I suppose. You know, that is one of the teased opponents, I guess. She does have a belt. She's got the strong. Is she the IWGP? What belt does she have? What title does she have? IWGP women's or the other ones?
I think she's got the women's title. You're putting me on the spot here.
Anyway, is she the elusive 10th championship that Mercedes Moné will be holding? She's the IWGP Women's Champion currently. All right.
Probably not happening, but nonetheless.
Brandon She's Cutler. Also the Skabon World Champion.
Oh, yeah.
Which Skabon. I don't know if she'll be defending that one. I don't know if Moné wants that one.
She has her limits. Cutler is filming the Young Bucks outside, and Matt has a great idea for his entrance. He's going to go put it together. So Nick goes into the casino, and much like Mark Wahlberg in The Gambler, he loses it all, and he comes back. Matt's got to go pay for the entrance, but Nick has lost all their money, and they stare at one another, and then we just do a dissolve into the same stare inside of the ring as they are identified as the Broke Bucks. So are they... They're back to being poor now.
Yeah. You see their account balance, John, it says zero in the graphic itself. They couldn't even get an entrance. They're just announced from the ring itself. Yeah.
Well, good thing they work for a company that often gives out six figures for trios matches. Like they should be fine in no time.
They do have to win, right?
This is just the up and down nature of being an independent contractor in AEW.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, we all knew this would be the end result, that they would lose their money and just be a lot more fun being broke again, right? I guess I just assumed that it would take place in a much more of a sort of like bigger way than just like what was ultimately what, like a 90-second video package. You know, they went from like being rich, and then just in one swoop broke.
I think he should have gone in though and just played he should have just played blackjack and put it all on like one.
Should have went all in.
Yeah, he should have and just lost it in one fell swoop.
I think he should have made like a ridiculous bet. Like don't they have a DraftKings promotion? Maybe he could have lost it all on like, I don't know, betting on the Jays to lose.
Well, I mean, in some years that would be a safe bet, but maybe not this year.
No. Mm-hmm.
Brodito and Kenny Omega against the Young Bucks and Josh Alexander. Bandito ended up getting to do the Macarena with a tag partner, but it was not Brody King. Instead, Kenny Omega, he engaged. And
he was more than happy to, Kenny Omega.
He was very excited to be back here. Bandito hit a moonsault to the floor on all three, and then it's Brody hitting repeated scoop slams, ending with Bandito slamming Brody on top of Josh Alexander. The Bucks stop a Terminator dive with super kicks, and they get the advantage on Omega as they go to picture-in-picture. And then King, eventually, he is in, hitting a cannonball off the edge. Kenny hits the Terminator dive and then chases after Don Callis, who runs away from the broadcast area. There's a 21-plex. Nick lands on his feet, and the babyfaces manage to do several counters, leading to a triple pile driver spot. The Indy Taker gets intercepted by a Brody forearm smash, and then after a poison rana to Alexander and a powerbomb, Omega connects with a pair of V-triggers, and it's a 21-plex, followed by the one-winged angel, and Kenny Omega pins Josh Alexander. And hell of a match to open things up.
An amazing match. I mean, anytime you have the Bucks and Kenny involved really in anything, you have a certain standard in mind, and they always live up to it. This trios match was really no different, and as you would expect from like those types of matches, incredibly well created and well coordinated sequences with very tiny margins of error, and almost all of them executed like flawlessly. Every second of this I thought was very exciting and even memorable, and I found it very satisfying in every way. I mean, Brodito are just, I think they're on fire right now, and I don't know if they're a team that were even supposed to have this run at all, but they fit in so well, like obviously with like the Bucks and Kenny dynamic. I shouldn't be surprised, but I was surprised at how well Josh Alexander meshed with the Bucks. Like, they work so well together that you would have expected them to have tagged together for years up until this point. But he was great here. Kenny, I thought, looked amazing, man. Like, I'm sure there's still health concerns, and I'm sure like time off is still very necessary for him. But like,
still working. Okay, he wasn't on TV, but he was still really busy. Okay,
sure. Yes, I understand.
He was fine. Okay, he was still doing stuff, okay? He wasn't just taking time off. It's not time off.
Just don't call it time off. I know.
He wasn't on TV, but that's not time off, okay? Just because you can't see him, okay?
Understood.
He's there in spirit.
But, I mean, at least at this point from watching this, like, we have no reason to be concerned at all, or at least about his ability to perform. He looked tremendous here.
Yeah, Omega left with the was alone with the Bucks in the ring, and then Josh attacks him, and the Bucks are somewhat conflicted here of like, were they about to reunite with Kenny or not? And then Jurassic Express walk out, and this leads to a double DDT by Perry, and then a pair of choke slams from Luchasaurus to the Young Bucks, and Kenny sends Josh Alexander out, and then Kenny gets into Jack Perry's face, and they have a big argument back and forth as Perry, he just then puts Kenny aside, dives onto the Bucks, and fights them to the back. And let's just go back here. Kenny was laid out a month ago by Kyle Fletcher with a brain buster off the apron through the table, which was, they did show the clip at the beginning of this, so that's not like completely out of sight, out of mind. Yep. But it certainly did not feel as though Kenny is going to that match right away. I really hope we get to that match. I'm sure we will, mm-hmm. but it better not be in like a year.
Well, he's got to work through the rest of the Callis family first.
Well, he's got a lot of way people to go through. Like, dude, if he has to go through the Callis family, that is a year away before he gets to Kyle.
Be like
at
3 years before we get to
God, Kyle, we're gonna get like the back to back match, the best of seven with Lance Archer. Yeah. So,
but this
and
is,
then this Jack Perry thing, which is funny because that Vice interview was just done with Jack Perry the other day, where it mentions Jack Perry at one point was earmarked for a program with Kenny that got scrapped, and it looks as though they are very much going to go to that.
This attack is referencing a prior stretcher attack.
Yes,
Kenny, right?
Yeah. Don't forget that from a year and a half ago.
Like, was it this one with all the blood coming out?
I believe this was the projectile blood vomit angle. Like
the one involving Okada and the Elite.
This was around right? March of last year.
Okay.
When
they
knocked them off the stretcher and such.
Kenny has had a lot of like, you know, getting laid out attacks since, and this segment tried to like,
he's got a list like yeah. People to kill. Very long.
And this segment tried to like, I would say almost try to do too much at once, and that like it tried to like answer.
Yeah, we're not done yet, folks. We're still we have more programs to set up for Kenny before the end of this.
Well, clearly he's not taking time off, but he might be off doing other work for some time because they had to build like three different things here at one time with Kenny.
Maybe they'll do a whole Kenny Omega pay-per-view, and he's going to go through all his adversaries in one night. He's just going to do like eight matches.
I think that would do quite well, actually.
Omega says he has been here since day one. He has been here for the highs and the lows, and he appreciates and values all of you people. I have lost some over the years. He says he mentions that they have lost some people over the years, but we've experienced it together. And then the lights go out just long enough for Excalibur to note there's some issue with the lighting here. I love that to this day, Excalibur, it's never a plot device. It's always a technical problem that we are experiencing on live television that Excalibur will never buy into the fact.
He just has a lot of faith in this production crew that they will never, or at least like...
Or very little in this production team that, of course, we're losing the power in the middle of our broadcast on our anniversary show. But magically, the lights come back on, and there to unmask, it is Andrade, who attacks Kenny. So add him to the list. And look at this fan. He was not expecting this one. And then, folks, he has brought with it. He's not come alone to AEW. He has brought with him the message. And he hits the message on Kenny. Not identified as such. I would imagine that is going to get a new name. I'm praying. And Don Callis enters the ring. And yes, he joins the Don Callis family, which is just preposterous at this point. We get a visual later for everyone. They can take attendance. This group is now at 10 people. This is like the biggest wrestling group since the NWO.
Oh, forget the Death Riders. Like, really, like half the roster is in the Don Callis family at this point, and this is the real takeover. I mean, it obviously it's trying to build up to something. I mean, some members are probably not going to maybe last the year. But we are approaching NWO levels of membership here in the Don Callis family. It's a very stacked roster. Now, let's just talk about Andrade. I mean, a surprise to me. I would assume a surprise to most people really watching this entire show. You know, we were speculating about what Andrade's next move would be. And I don't know how many people would have suggested AEW, just given the fact that he's already exited this place for WWE, and the fact that AEW is already so like full, not to mention like potential issues like with people like Sammy Guevara that you wonder if he's actually, you know, still has been able to address. All of these things combined, you know, just I think let most people do is just assume he would not be making his way over. So when he arrived here, I thought it was like one of the more shocking returns and debuts in quite some time. So I guess it tells you that, hey, like he left on good terms, evidently. And, you know, Tony sees some value in bringing him in on immediate sort of attachment. I don't know if you can get a better spot for him than a feud with Kenny Omega. You know, like this is showing a lot of confidence in Andrade's value to this company at this point. And I'm suddenly very interested. You know, like, I wouldn't have said the same thing prior to seeing this interaction, but suddenly the promise of an Andrade Kenny match, I think is great. They did wrestle, I believe, like 4 years ago in AAA, but it's a fresh feud in AEW, and I'm suddenly very interested to see what he'll do in AEW.
Yes. Well, I pulled up one of our old videos here, Wei. Sammy Guevara Andrade incident overshadows AEW Dynamite 3-year anniversary show. So, I mean, what better way to celebrate Andrade than bringing him back 3 years later? Yeah, listen, I think at the end of this, I think Tony Khan obviously sees a value in Andrade, who I think is he's landing on his feet well beyond what I think many people's expectations were. Mm-hmm. But even like, I don't think anyone can deny that when this guy is on, he is a fantastic performer. But for that reason, I still would not have been. I would have said, you know what? Go out, prove yourself. And I'm not saying there's no chance I'm going to bring you back, but I'm not going to be the place that just, you know, you left here, it did not work out elsewhere, and sending this message that, hey, you'll always have a spot here at AEW. It's like, it's you leave here and you've got to work your way back if you want to come back here. Like, this would not be the guy that I would be, you know, overextending myself to. Like, what is the threat of losing this guy to? I mean, he can go to, like where is he going to go that, like, he would be out of reach for AEW? But, I mean, he had an idea, he has a plan for him, and he's coming in, and not just coming in for the sake of it. Like, he is coming in for a upper-level program with Kenny Omega. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I think that that's probably where it begins and ends, is he thinks this guy is a tremendous performer and is willing to go to bat and give him another shot. But I just don't know if I would have been making the same move.
Yeah.
Because I don't see this guy as a difference maker. And like, there are those stars that you would maybe just, you know, you stick your neck out for, and it might not be the best message to send, pardon the pun, but I don't look at Andrade as being like your guy that is going to be a difference maker in this company.
Mm-hmm. Well, you never know. You never know what changes somebody might have been able to go through. I mean, look no further than CM Punk is somebody that I think received some of the biggest naysaying, and look how well he's turned out, right? I mean, this is not CM Punk, of course.
He would be out of his mind to come back to this company and not realize that, hey, I probably do not have an easy return. Like, mm-hmm. this is my chance that... I think he comes into this with a lot different perspective than the first time around. So, I mean, this could turn out to be like a great pickup for AEW. We will see, because he does have, I think, that kind of pressure behind him on this run. And this also, I mean, just naturally, I think everyone expected CMLL to want him. And this mm-hmm. only solidifies that, because I'm sure he's going to be doing Arena Mexico shows very yeah. soon.
I like the fact that he's coming back as a heel. I think that's a very good move compared to, you know, how he left WWE. I'm very much looking forward to more Spanish introductions from Don Callis, if we're getting more of that for Andrade. I'm also very curious, of course, to see what interactions he may or may not have with LFI and Sammy Guevara. I mean, obviously, everybody's in the same company. I'm sure everybody's adults and they can work together fine. And I also imagine, like, that might be something that, like, they will play with for storyline purposes. So I'm looking forward to the match. So we got Kenny going up against Andrade. Kenny, something to do with Jack Perry and Luchasaurus, although that's probably not so much a match against each other, but maybe more of a team up. Kenny and the Bucks have a dangling thread. And am I missing anybody? Fletcher, of course.
Yeah, like the biggest one. Like, at the end of this, I do have to say that the Kyle Fletcher thing felt like it almost felt as though it was almost forgotten by the end of this.
It's in the back burner for now.
It's on the very far back burner.
I'll tell you, though, like, on that list that I'm kind of, I don't know if I'm sensing we're actually going to get, but I really want to see the Josh Alexander match, you know, like, that was the interaction here. But by the end of this, it felt like it was like number
five.
With Kenny. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's Alexander's dream match. Right. And it wasn't really like, didn't really feel like it was like built up as any sort of.
You might get that on Collision.
Yeah, sure.
You'll find out at 5:00.
Support for this podcast comes from NordVPN. You know, it's gotten really expensive to be a wrestling fan. So it's no surprise that VPNs have basically become an essential tool if you're watching wrestling week in and week out. I'm lucky. I live in a territory where I get full access to WWE programming and premium live events on one streaming service for one fee. But let's say I travel to the US for a month. You really think I'm going to juggle a bunch of different services just to keep up with Raw, SmackDown, NXT, and PLEs? Instead, I just boot up my NordVPN, set my location back to Canada, turn on my streaming service, and I'm good to go. I even have the NordVPN app installed right on my Apple TV. A couple clicks with my remote, no wires, no technical knowledge, done. So go to nordvpn.com/postwrestling, sign up for a 2-year plan, and you get 4 extra months for free with the 30-day money-back guarantee. nordvpn.com/postwrestling. Stay safe, save money, and take control of your internet with Nord.
Then they aired this great video package going over all the highlights of Dynamite. And what was most interesting in this was not only did Andrade make this video, but Cody Rhodes and CM Punk all got very quick snippets. Like, they pretty much got everyone of significance that has wrestled in AEW into this like 4 or 5 minute video package.
With a lot more focus, I would say, on like the actual current stars, you know, that they can actually use. But yeah, I must have missed that even, because I was almost like looking out for any sort of significant.
They showed Cody delivering the moonsault off the cage to Wardlow, and they had Cody. Yeah. They had Punk in the face paint when he teamed up with I think Sting and Darby. Yeah,
like a focus shot of
yeah,
them?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it was very quick, but he was in it.
Yeah, like, and it's not like, well, so what? What I mean is, like, the world isn't ending because they showed their face, you know?
Of course not. But this is the first time that they have ever shown his face on AEW programming since it was caption TV.
It was covered in face paint, though, so did they really show his face?
I guess. It's better than him lunging at a mysterious figure off camera.
No, they didn't show that. As part of the highlights.
That actually would have been hilarious if they put the black and white footage in there. Yeah. Mark Briscoe cuts a promo that the anniversary, it's time for reflection. He's been consumed by MJF for the last 6 months, but he's all talk. You kept bringing up my brother's name, and those words had consequences to them. So you also said I couldn't win the big one, but I won big enough to send you on a sabbatical. So I'll be cheering on my friend Orange Cassidy tonight, and MJF, you're going to be at home taking tax out of your ass.
So this seems to suggest that we are continuing the MJF feud with Mark Briscoe, does it not?
Somewhat. I mean, I don't really get any clear sense of Mark Briscoe. It's like he won this big match, but it hasn't really opened the door for him to go for anything bigger. Like, I thought he was going to say at the end of this, you said I couldn't win the big one. I beat you and I sent you home, and now it's time for me to go for the big one or something like that. But he didn't really make that clear. Like, he was trying to get that TNT title match with Kyle Fletcher, and he didn't really make that his target from this promo. It's just, hey, my buddy's going for the belt. So maybe he will. Orange Cassidy failed tonight, and maybe Briscoe is going to challenge Mark or Kyle Fletcher.
I don't doubt that. It just felt like last week, it seemed like he was definitively done with MJF and was now into having fun with the conglomeration. But now to bring MJF back up, including like this closing line, you know, about him picking tax out of his ass, like, just seems to suggest to me that somehow we might be continuing this.
A tax in the ass match.
Yes.
Tax can go into a lot of painful places, as we'll get to. Mm-hmm. Fletcher and Orange Cassidy for the TNT Championship. The best part of it. Well, there was a lot of best parts to this match. But to get heat, the crowd starts chanting, "You can't wrestle," at Kyle Fletcher. And he responds by just looking in bewilderment at this crowd and yells, "Me? Are you kidding?" It was a great response to this "You Can't Wrestle" chant. So if you were wondering if there was any ring rust on Orange Cassidy, there was not. His hands are placed in the pockets, and then he stops a lawn dart by arm-dragging Kyle, and then he does just all these incredible setups for tornado DDTs. He goes for a high cross. Kyle catches him and drops him with this vicious-looking Michinoku driver. And then Cassidy comes back with a stun dog. There's a power bomb turned into a DDT. And then there's a counter by Kyle into a spinning tombstone. Goes for the brainbuster, but Orange counters with a small package. And then they make their way onto the turnbuckle when Hologram appears. And he comes to chase Don Callis away, but then crotches Orange Cassidy, leading to a brainbuster on the top turnbuckle, allowing Fletcher to prevail. And then they beat down on Orange, Conglomeration runs down, and we get the full army of the Don Callis family walking out. This stage was barely big enough to contain all these members, and Hologram reveals himself to be the clone.
El Clone.
As Hologram is long gone.
I mean, you spoke a bit about Excalibur being completely perplexed every time the lights go out. I felt it was like ridiculous that they, after weeks and weeks and weeks of this clone being teased, and even Excalibur saying there all of these rumors of the clone, for them to be like, "Who's that? I have no idea who that is." That's obviously or like before they were like
Hologram's
mask.
Hologram
in this like ridiculous looking robe that like we've never ever seen Hologram ever wear, like it's Mortal Kombat like bathrobe.
It's new.
Like, and they're like, "Who? That must be Hologram." Like, that sounded ridiculous. That made the announcer sound so stupid to me. And obviously, like, the robe is because he's got tattoos and the actual hologram does not, but I did not think this reveal of the clone was very well done or that well received by this audience. Obviously, this was not the initial plan for how things would have turned out. But I thought this reveal was pretty lame.
Did you like this reveal more or less than the idea that some people had floated around that this title versus streak was going to end with Hologram losing, ending the streak, but it's El Clone who has taken Hologram's
so wait,
outfit.
Fletcher beats the heel. Yeah,
he was going to lose he was going to throw the match and cost Hologram his streak because he had taken his
well, thanks,
I thought both sounded horrible.
Thanks,
so.
Clone. You took. You saved me from losing the match.
Well, it would go down in how would that go down in the record books?
Oh, you mean the clone would be throwing the match just
yes.
to ruin Hologram's
yeah
strike?
To ruin his streak.
I love it. That would have been great.
Well, they saved that one, but yeah, it's gonna be a long time till Hologram can get his revenge for losing his like Timu outfit here. By I wouldn't even be like I know they did the attack and credited it to El Clone, but like had this been just in a vacuum?
No, it's Fletcher. Fletcher did the attack.
But you had the flashing signal as well.
So Hologram pressed the button to turn the lights off, but it was Fletcher who actually did the attack.
That's even worse. He could have helped if he wanted to, but instead he just played with the lights.
And just like the sirens buzzing and shit, like on stage, I thought that was so like cheesy.
Yeah. You know, they could have just said that they could have just tried to keep this injury as quiet as possible and had Aris play Hologram for like the next 6 months.
So again, like I thought that's where they were going to go, but the tattoos just kind of give it away.
Yeah, I guess it's
he could have been wrestling in this robe for 6 months.
Yeah. They could have just told Aris, you know, we're going a different way. You've just got to get rid of those tattoos for where we're going. Yeah, not the greatest debut here, but I mean, this Don Callis family is literally like at 10 people now, as they had them all out here, and yes, we would also get the challenge later with Okada and Takeshita, who will go for the tag belts next week with Brodito, which should be outstanding match next week.
I'm just counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Okay, we got 9 on stage in Trent. Don't forget Trent. Am I missing anybody else? Any more secret members?
I'm counting 10 right here, Way.
Oh, sorry.
You're missing
you're
Art.
Right. I miss Fletcher. Right?
Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Wait, yeah. 9. Not including Don.
Did you get Archer in the back?
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
There's
7,
Josh,
8,
Andrade, Okada, Callis, Archer, Kyle, Romero, and then there's the clone, Takeshita, and Hechicero.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm not counting Don.
Well, why wouldn't you count Don Callis?
Because he's not an actual member. He's a manager.
Well, there's 10 people in this group.
He's not really a part of the group. Like, he's a manager. Anyway, thank you.
Math with John and Way is not going to be a recurring segment.
Yeah, I know. We just spent way too much time counting the Don Callis family members. And thank you, chat room, for reminding us that Wardlow and Mark Davis are part of the group. And is Brian Cage a part of this group too? He is, yeah. Right? He's Archer's partner. So
yeah, Mark Davis is a member in perpetuity.
yeah, for the rest of his life because of the bad contract he signed. So we got, what is this, like 13 members got now?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to get their own show at some point. Renee is with Mercedes Moné. She will become the longest reigning TBS champion in 16 days. I don't think Jade Cargill made the video as I go back now. She will defend it next week against someone from Florida. And then she also wants to win the tag titles and suggests who should my partner be. And in comes Harley Cameron with the return of the puppet and talks about their chemistry. And she is shot down by Mercedes.
Right. Yeah.
They're my pick to win the belts now.
So somebody from Florida could be anybody in
Do you know
wrestling.
How many wrestlers that have been cut in the last 5 years reside in Florida? This could literally be anyone.
Yeah, seriously. Does not really narrow it down. Do you have a pick? Any guesses?
No, I have none.
Yeah, I literally have none. It could be too many people.
Hangman Page, Samoa Joe, and Powerhouse Hobbs against Moxley, Claudio, and Daniel Garcia. So Hobbs hits Moxley with these repeated World's Strongest slams onto the edge of the apron. So he just does his big power spots, and he just does them over and over, and it gets great reactions. Claudio hits a power bomb to Hobbs, so they get the advantage. And then eventually Hobbs gets a power slam, tags in Hangman, and Samoa Joe is not happy about the fact that he wanted the tag, and Hangman got it. So Page and Moxley square off. He avoids the deadeye. Then Claudio is in, hits a pile driver to Hangman, and then they regain control on Hangman. Hobbs comes in, hits a spinebuster. Joe finally enters and knocks Garcia off the apron. There's a paradigm shift to Joe. Buckshot connects to Moxley, and then he is caught with the pop-up uppercut from Claudio. And then as he goes for the neutralizer, Hangman avoids, hits the deadeye, and a match-closing buckshot to pin Claudio. And so the babyfaces get the win. Another very good trios match on the show. And Paige hands the two their trios belts, and in handing it to Joe, it slips and falls on the ground.
Okay. In Joe's defense, he didn't really just hand it to him, okay? This was a pretty aggressive handing off, all right?
The adrenaline was just roaring through his veins at this point. It's like, you got to be ready for the handoff.
I mean, but the handoff needs to be, I would say, a little bit more gentler. A little bit more gentle. I mean, these are, you know, pro wrestlers, of course. But this was a much more of a, here you go, take your piece of garbage. And this is not as great as my championship. It's only the trios belt. That was the implication here.
So up until this point, the announcers, like, they did call attention to the tag spot here. But you could have watched the last 5 minutes on mute, and you would have known exactly where this is going because Samoa Joe was so goddamn great here.
Yeah,
okay.
He was.
He just conveyed everything from his annoyed look to that belt falling. You may as well have just slapped the man in the face if you were Hangman Page, because that's the reaction Joe gives. Joe was so awesome in this whole thing before they just ramp it up. So he finally, this belt, like, this is just not going to stand. So Joe confronts Hangman, and Hobbs has to get between them, and Joe blames Hangman for stealing his tag, and boom, we got security out there, like, shit is going down, and Joe yells to Hangman, "You've never beaten me," and they have a pull apart, and Hangman is furious at this true but vicious dig towards him. Like, this was like a Bret Hart shot, okay? It's like, I can't argue with your fact, but it was uncalled for.
Yeah.
Joe,
I thought this was really, really strong. As you, like, you know, really were able to point out, I thought it was Joe's acting that was really, really the thing that stood out here. I mean, let's talk about...
You did not need the commentary here at all to explain this story, and by the post-match, obviously, they get into it, but, like, this was just... And it was so simple. Like, it was, like, it didn't have to be a, oh, you stole my car and tried to run me over. It was like, bitch, that tag was mine. This
but
fucker,
if he stole his car, I mean, that would have made it that much better, I think.
Well, there's still time, okay? We've got a few weeks. I thought this was great, and we'd revisit this later with promos from both guys backstage. And my thinking was, this is going to headline Title Tuesday, but no, they're going, this is the pay-per-view title match. So, I mean, they are that yeah, they're this is the big program of the month.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly feel like somebody like Joe, to have the space to be able to tell a fuller story by having a pay-per-view showcase rather than just a hotshot build to next week, I think would have been I'm happier for that, certainly.
Joe needs a big promo next week or just going into the pay-per-view.
Yeah,
for sure.
You know, this company at this point, like, they're down on Swerve and Ospreay, and that means you need, you know, credible title challengers, credible people that can headline a show. And Joe is almost like always one of those guys who's just kind of in wait in a bit of a holding pattern as part of this like very inactive trios division that you could just kind of call off the bench at any point to like take on one of these, you know, title challenges.
This guy just needs to cut a few promos and he will be there. And quite frankly, they had to work a lot harder to get Kyle Fletcher to this point. And if that pay-per-view number held up as well as has been reported, that's giving me a whole lot of confidence that I can headline a pay-per-view with Hangman and Joe. And I think like I'd be very confident after what you just pulled off last month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. With hopefully like more storytelling similar to this, you know, that felt very good in tone, very realistic in tone. I would be very confident too. So I'm looking forward to another big Samoa Joe match. Yeah.
Jetspeed and Willow cut a promo. So it's going to be Kevin Knight against one member of FTR on Saturday's Collision. Which one? Tune in to find out.
Stokely also promised a surprise for Jetspeed in due time, whatever that means.
Due time. Yeah. Okay.
Could be anything.
Yeah.
I got your visa revoked.
Oh, dear. Hey, Speedball.
Yeah.
Another 5 years. Ouch. Renee catches up with Hangman Page. He says, in 6 years in this company, I've never been so confused. It's like, I can think about a promo that you were involved in that would leave you very confused that took place on live TV. I can think about a segment where the opponent I'm not working with tonight called me out for a match unprovoked, and I was completely confused that they called me out on live television.
Also segments that did not make the highlight package.
No, those did not. The summer of 2022.
Okay.
He refers to Joe's bitch fit, and he told me I've never beaten him. He credits Joe as being one of the reasons he won this belt at All In Texas, and so he's laying out the challenge for Wrestle Dream. Joe, I look up to you, but if you throw another fit like that, I'll ruin your life. This was the Hangman that was needed in 2022.
Where does Samoa Joe live? And I hope it's a gated community.
Look out, okay? I'll ruin your life. I will arson your house. So this is what pay-per-views sell upon.
I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, yeah. I think
especially
these two,
the promos.
They've got a couple weeks. They could really hammer this one home.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Tony Storm and Ty Mello. So I thought these first three matches on the show were just outstanding. And then I thought this one kind of took a dip. It was just the crowd kind of took this as sort of their come down match. Tony comes out. They state that she looks lost and confused without the belt, and she sells a lot for Ty Mello in this match. Ty is working over the arm, doing the Suzuki arm bar, multiple kicks into the corner, and then Storm fires back, hits a DDT, misses with the hip attack, eats another kick, which the crowd boos this. They don't want to see Ty win. She goes for the Ty KO, which is stopped into a snap German, hits the hip attack, and wins with the Storm Zero. And then Storm, as the screen goes to black and white, cuts her promo, that at All Out, she did not hear victory or defeat. I heard nothing. A silence that gobbled her up. She was like Bruno Sammartino losing to Ivan Koloff, where it was just silence in Madison Square Garden. And she said that Chris Statlander was everything I wasn't, a glorious champion. and all the questions followed me into the dark. Who am I without the title? But Statlander, I am not finished with you. I need to know one-on-one, and you can name the time and the place. And credit to Tony, because, man, she had to battle through these what chants, which are something that I cannot recall Tony having to deal with here. It was very annoying. Even
many AEW wrestlers with too much.
And this was not even one where she was doing like the cadence that like gave the opening for it. It was just fans wanting to like just disrupt this promo, but she just powered through it. But yeah.
Well, all it takes is like two drunk fans to like, you know, get it going and maybe other people jumping in. I mean, yeah, I found that to be really annoying, especially like just because I this was like one of Tony's more serious promos. She was really like trying to get into a zone, trying to, you know, vow revenge and trying to discover whether or not she actually has what it takes to be champion, or at least to have some sort of identity beyond being a champion. So almost derailed it, almost ruined it. But I mean, she plowed through and I thought did a great job here, you know, cutting this. I'm the match itself with Ty Mello. I mean, I it was fine. Nothing wrong with the match, but nothing that really left an impression. And ultimately, I almost see it as just a bit of a bonus for this crowd because they were really just promised a Tony Storm appearance and not necessarily a match. So to just get it almost just felt like it was a nice little bonus as a prelude to this promo.
So Collision's got the Kevin Knight match with either Dax or Cash and Eddie Kingston against Dralístico. And we got promos from Sammy Guevara speaking on behalf of Dralístico and Eddie Kingston telling Dralístico not to have Sammy speak for you.
So Sammy versus Eddie Kingston seems to be a destination, I guess. LFI with Hook and all that stuff as well. I've been really disappointed at Eddie Kingston's return. I mean, I do understand like Collision sort of needs its own appeals, but I would have at least Eddie to have cut like a longer sort of in-person promo on Dynamite at this point.
This guy desperately needed a promo upon returning. Like last week should have been at like after All Out, come back and just cut like a big Eddie Kingston promo about what he's been through for the last 16 months. Like this is like a massive, massive injury he had to come back from. And I think like that's what's going to get Eddie Kingston across is the promos and not just like the matches. I think you want to have that big return promo. Renee catches up with Joe and Hobbs. Joe is not surprised at this Hangman challenge. We are not allies. This is not a misunderstanding. This is very clear. And maybe I've been too busy with the Death Riders and forgot who I am. And I'm going to need to remind you who I am. Paige, you have never been greater than me on any single day of your life. This is all cowboy shit, but unfortunately, you're standing in front of Samoa Joe. Allow me to welcome you to a world of deep shit.
Amazing. Samoa Joe cut
a
promo.
He needs a shirt next week.
Deep shit. Well, the crowd start chanting, deep shit, deep shit. This was great, man.
They really did a great job. Like, if you were to tell me before the show, they're going to go with Hangman and Joe at the pay-per-view, I would say, okay. Like, it feels like certainly if it's, you know, it's a former champion. It's kind of just, we got to heat someone up for Hangman. But I think that's really underestimating just like, these are two of your top talkers that I think will do a really good job. As opposed to had they just done this for next week's TV, for instance, where this would just come and go. But you've got several weeks that Joe does not disappoint when called upon, one or two times a year to do the big match. And I think that'll be the case here, but it is an interesting one to see how well they can perform on this pay-per-view.
I feel like Joe is one of those examples that show that, you know, like you can get older, and not to say Joe is showing any sort of signs of aging, like in his wrestling whatsoever, but like you can get older, but you can still be maybe even a better professional wrestler because your acting ability and your promo ability might continue to increase, which for him, I feel like it really has. So for that reason, I'm still very excited about Samoa Joe in 2025, you know, in these sort of positions. So, I'm hoping for more promos, more heated storytelling. How deep into maybe a heel role does Samoa Joe fall into, or do they just kind of maintain this as like two baby faces that like really hate each other?
All right, and from there, we move on to GOA against The Swirl with Ricochet on commentary.
What an awful name for a tag team.
The Swirl.
Oh.
So we get multiple handspring enziguris by Blake Christian, whose goal is to just work like the fastest style imaginable here. Toa overpowers Christian into the corner and then yanks Lee Johnson to the floor. Lee escapes, dives onto Khan on the opposite side, and then Toa posts himself on the floor, allowing Blake to hit a Fosbury flop through the ropes. Toa recovers, pounce to Blake, and then GOA hit their finisher to pin Lee Johnson. They attack. Ricochet comes into the ring, hits Blake Christian with a spirit gun as the Hurt Syndicate walk out. And MVP shouts out the area codes 914, 786, and 305. And he says, "Tell them who I am." And the whole place chants for MVP. But he acknowledges he embarrassed himself at All Out. I got beaten. So he owes an apology. Maybe I've lost a step, but I don't want to wrestle. I want to fight. I don't want to put wrestling boots on. I don't need a referee. So he wants a no DQ street fight next week in Jacksonville. And Ricochet agrees.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Our non-title match for Title Tuesday.
Maybe they can exchange a title of some sort. Like, you know, like their names.
Okay. Or they'll just... I mean, the Hurt Syndicate, they may believe they're still the tag champions in their mind. So, they're not aware they've lost these belts yet.
So do you have a prediction on who's going to win this one?
Oh, I think MVP is going over very strong next week in Daly's place.
Anything can happen. We don't know.
He's got to get his revenge, okay?
We don't know that.
Renee spoke with Statlander. She agrees to face Tony Storm at WrestleDream. And then Harley Cameron walks in, leading to our tornado tag.
So this is where we had the segment with Alicia talking to Don Callis.
Okay, I'm sorry. I totally missed this segment. So my bad.
It was just Callis saying that they've not just added two people, but they've added El Clone and also the great Andrade. And he says that we took you out, Kenny, but Brodito, you guys escaped. So he throws out a challenge next week, Brodito versus Takeshita and Okada. And Takeshita does not seem on board. He can't believe Don is actually putting them together in a team. But Okada says, "Yeah, you and me." So we're getting that one next week.
Chris Statlander, Darby Allin against Wheeler Yuta and Marina Shafir. So Darby and Chris attack them as they're entering by the balcony. Statlander does a high cross off of one of the walls. And then we get to ringside and Wheeler Yuta gets placed on a chair on the floor and Darby goes for a somersault dive through the ropes and totally wipes out on this chair as Yuta gets out of the way. Darby is half dead and Yuta fills the ring with chairs. Statlander has to fight back on her own as Darby is selling the impact of the chair spot. And Darby crawls into the ring and he gets hit with a German onto the stack of chairs. Statlander and Shafir fight on the barricade, and after a poke to the eye, Shafir gets suplexed through the timekeeper's table. Darby then superplexes Yuta on the stack of chairs, where he takes just as much of these chairs as Yuta does, if not more so. And then Yuta, after recovering, brings in a bag of tacks. And the tacks just remain in the corner. Statlander takes an Olympic slam from Yuta onto the chairs. And Chris comes back and suplexes Yuta on the chairs. And Shafir applies a headlock onto Chris Statlander. And Statlander lifts up Marina Shafir and in her bare feet drops her feet first onto the tacks. Of which Brian Danielson calls us, "Oh, that sucks."
Man, I'm sure it's been done before, but I just don't recall too many barefoot tack spots I've ever seen.
Did you ever hear the Matt Jackson tack story? I think it was Danielson that talked about this on the pre-show at All Out in advance of the tables and tacks match, that Matt Jackson in one of the matches took a tack into his foot, and when they were trying to remove it, the part of it, like the end part, broke. So there was a piece lodged in his foot that they could not get out.
And like a splinter, but with a thumbtack?
I believe so, yes. So that's what I thought about here. So this sounded fun because there were about like 20 in her feet here.
Goodness. Wow.
And then the ending. Powder gets thrown into Marina Shafir's eyes. And because she's blinded, she chokes Yuta, leading to a 450 by Statlander onto both of them on the canvas and a coffin drop by Darby to pin Yuta, and the babyfaces get the win.
This match was awesome. Great match. Like, from the get-go, things were just, like, high intensity. You got some great violent spots here, as I think you would expect coming up from AEW street fights. A lot of creativity as well, as you would expect from an AEW street fight. And I thought a really clever, like, final sequence that could have looked really ridiculous with the whole powder blinding and everything, but I thought it turned out so well, just in succession from, like, the thumbtacks to the powder to, I thought everything was very well executed. And I was surprised at how much Yuta got here. Like, Yuta was kind of leading the charge. Now that Yuta is no longer just a third guy in the Death Riders, and he's doing some interesting intergender stuff now with, like, a Shafir. Like, he got to handle a lot of the offense here, and I thought he ended up looking like a bit of a bigger badass than usual. And I thought Shafir was actually really great for the most part, you know, like a little bit of a messy sort of, like, 619 pile driver thing that she was doing.
Yeah, but she went for this 619 into a head scissors, and it was, yeah, it was
not the most perfect, but, like, the next time she does it, I'm sure it'll look great. But I thought she came across,
she's gonna get remembered for the tack spot, because that was awesome. I mean, it's tough to do new variations on the tax, but she managed to here.
And I think she's just managed, like, she's come a long way from, you know, like, NXT and just even the beginning of her AEW run. In that, like, she's really managed to build this sort of aura around her as this, like, silent monolithic killer that she's been able to uphold really well, even in a match like this.
She's overcome that promo on Dark.
Yeah, I don't even remember it anymore.
Oh, well. Some do. I thought Darby really phoned it in. I thought he could have done a whole lot more in this match. This seemed to be like
it easy, guy,
you know, could have done a whole lot more. But yeah, you had like four, I thought, like, pretty spectacular matches.
Did we go through the post match?
No, not Pat? Yet. I'm just stating, we had four really great matches on this show. So Storm, Tony Storm walks out and has a stare down with Chris, and they get into a big brawl. They're separated as they head to the back. Darby is left, and he's whipping Yuta with a belt when Pac arrives. Another fan that just jumped into the ring. Security was detained, though, so this fan just went wild. And
I'm sorry, but Pac in his
does he look more like just average than... Like, he just...
Well, I wouldn't say average, because what I'm about to say is this man looks just like Eric Marcotte, does he not? Okay, I don't know if you've ever seen Eric Marcotte without the hat, but this is he. Okay, I don't know. I mean, Eric, probably maybe if he started working out over the summer, yeah, like he would look just like this.
You haven't seen Eric without a shirt on.
Well, I haven't seen this guy without his shirt.
Yeah,
on.
What's he hiding? What's he got to hide? His pack.
Maybe he got a bunch of tattoos. Maybe this is Ares playing the clone of Pac.
Pac arrives, stops Darby, and just chokes the hell out of this guy with a belt as the rest of the Death Riders appear. Moxley says, "You have zero chance of doing what you need to do to win at WrestleDream. I don't know how I'll do it, but I will make you quit for the first time in your career." And then for good measure, Pac just took this guy's head off with a lariat to end the show, and Darby left for dead. As I imagine, this man is going to be left for dead many times over the next couple of weeks.
He's very good at being left for dead. Yes.
Yes.
I thought a stronger end to Dynamite this week than last. And I thought overall, like, a very strong addition of Dynamite, both in ring and also in terms of build for the next show.
Yeah. I mean, they had a bunch to do here between, like, next Tuesday's show, which, I mean, we do have three matches for it. So that's not nothing.
Completely disregard our entire conversation.
No, I would still say by the end of this show, in terms of, like, I still would maintain, like, this next Tuesday show, I don't feel it's been built up to any degree that, you know, prior head-to-head contests have been treated. Like, this does feel as sort of just, we're doing Dynamite on Tuesday, and that's it. We're not in this to win the night or have this, like, I did not sense like this is a show that is coming out to win the night.
No, because they probably have bigger battles in their future, like in their past and also in their future, that they probably want to really build up and stack up for.
Yeah, and I would not be advocating for just hot-shotting for the sake of it either. But yeah, we will see what the full card is. But yeah, Wrestle Dream, we now have, what, three matches? We have Hangman and Samoa Joe, Chris Statlander and Tony Storm, and the I Quit match thus far.
All right. Mm-hmm. And then Blood and Guts is being built up as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's really early to, you know, true, be setting that up. Like, we literally have 6 weeks until that show, so... You know, they've got like,
well, we already have like most, like, you can predict most of the teams. I feel
5.5 weeks, they'll lay everything out on Twitter. What's happening? Yeah. So there you go. A very strong edition of Dynamite. And next week, we will be doing the show on Tuesday night after Title Tuesday. So
we're going to go head to head with Up Next. All right. So,
and we're announcing nothing in advance.
We're going to invade. Sorry. We're going to have a showdown.
Jesus Christ. We're going to have a showdown. Mm-hmm. Showdown, yes, way. All right. We're going to say goodbye to everyone on the YouTube stream, but we're continuing over at the Post Wrestling Cafe, where your membership gets you the XL version of this show, as well as Rewind a Raw and Rewind a SmackDown. This month on the cafe, we're chatting the Smashing Machine, TNA Bound for Glory, King of Pro Wrestling, Nobody Speak. We're also going to be going back to 1992 to review the G1 Climax. So much more. Peacemaker Season 2, Marvel Zombies, and the book I finished today, 107 Days by Kamala Harris.
I'm very much looking forward to it.
Where she shoots.
Yes. 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 Mm-hmm.
All that and much more at postwrestlingcafe.com. Goodbye to YouTube. This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.